Welcome to Kingston Reid's Word to the Wise podcast series for HR and safety professionals.
Well, welcome everyone to another Kingston Reid podcast. I'm Alice DeBoos, and with me today for the first time is fellow partner Michael Mead. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Alice. How are you doing?
Very well. Today we wanted to give workplace relations or HR people a few thoughts to ponder while having a hard-earned rest over the next couple of weeks. I know that our clients are as exhausted as we are because it's been a huge year for those in people management. And while you may not want to think about work over the next couple of weeks, most people can't help themselves. And we thought we could plant a few seeds for you to think about while you're hopefully lying on a beach somewhere and enjoying the odd mid-morning Aperol spritz or two, or perhaps that's just a little window into my plans. So, Michael, what do you think that people in the ER, WR, HR world should be thinking about?
Yeah, thanks so much, Alice. And look, the idea of sitting on a beach and reflecting on the year that was sounds absolutely divine. And I'm nervous to say that the first tip or issue that I'm thinking about and that we're exercising my mind as I sit on the beach has to do with COVID, for fear that that might cause people after this year to tune out immediately. But
most of us want to stop thinking about COVID.
Indeed, you know, the last thing that probably we want to think about after the year that was. But I think, look, if you're in HR, ER, employment law, the idea of COVID in our world and our professional world is now a kind of inescapable and an inevitable set of circumstances that we'll need to manage through the upcoming year as well. So, you know, what we're expecting to see, and I think what businesses should really be thinking about, is how to manage what will be an increasing, I expect, volume of terminations arising out of COVID, and particularly the posture that businesses might take concerning their stance on mandatory vaccination in their workplaces. So, you know, in that context, some of the key things that I think will drive both decision making but also risk for businesses is, you know, what's the structure that you're going to be putting in and around any decisions that you might take as a business to mandate vaccination in your workplace? The issue of reasonable and lawful directions, and those who are watching the BHP case with some interest would be well aware of the idea of reasonable and lawful directions, but the importance of consultation to ground those obligations. So making sure that you've got appropriate processes and systems to consult with your workforce if you're going to rely on a policy direction in and around mandating vaccination and the need for that to be reasonable and lawful. Now, what we are seeing, Alison, no doubt you're seeing it as well from some of the Kingston Reid's clients, is some businesses thinking about making it a precondition of employment, so amending contracts of employment as well. Now, that'll create an interesting scenario, I think, in terms of a bit of a two-speed workforce, because you'll have some existing workers, no doubt, that aren't engaged contractually with that precondition, and then a new cohort of workers that may, in fact, have that setting in place. So you will, I think, find yourself being drawn back to, if you're going to mandate vaccinations in your workplace, the idea of reasonable and lawful directions at a macro level. So therefore, that consultation issue then once again becomes key. One of the other things that I think is just also going to be inevitable for us to grapple with is how we deal with COVID in our workplaces. So the idea that if you look at the increasing infection rates as a result of variants that are in our community, you know, we will have COVID, I think, in our workplaces at some stage over the course of the year if we haven't already. And it's just not practical, I think, to think that we'll need to shut down workplaces at a moment's notice because of that. So things like rapid antigen testing and having those in your workplace to try and manage and understand the risk profile should that event occur. And probably the other thing that I think us as HR and ER professionals need to be attuned to is the idea of continuing to refresh through working with our workplace health and safety specialists, the risk profile or the risk matrix that exists within the business to manage the risk of COVID. So that will not be a set and forget, so we'll need to continue to update that throughout the course of the coming year, I'd expect, just so we can manage those ever-present, regrettably ever-present risks of COVID within the workplace.
And booster shots come into that risk register or risk assessment, don't they?
Oh, look, that's such a good point. And booster shots also in the context of as you set your overarching policy setting for whatever approach you might take, making sure that it doesn't just address the idea of vaccination as an event, but vaccination and the continuation of boosters.
An ongoing obligation.
Absolutely, because otherwise you'll find yourself very quickly, I expect, with a policy that has very little by way of teeth that you can rely on if the booster element isn't also part of that that setting and approach.
Yeah, because undoubtedly with waning effectiveness without the booster, then the risk of transmission of COVID within the workplace increases, so it needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. But there is far more to consider, I think, over your summer sojourn than just COVID. So, Alice, I think, you know, we've talked at length about COVID this year. What are some of the other things from your perspective that businesses should be thinking about as they set up for the new year?
One thing that sprung to mind for me is sexual harassment. Now, sexual harassment probably shouldn't spring to mind for most people over a summer break, but it is an issue that did receive increased attention this year. Perhaps many in HR are breathing a sigh of relief that there weren't huge, or in most places there weren't huge Christmas parties this year, so they're not dealing with the inevitable aftermath, those events and the sexual harassment complaints that are often made. It is important to consider a couple of things, I think, that have come out of the profile of the Respect at Work report. One of those is thinking about sexual harassment in terms of a WHS issue, so a health and safety issue. And we spoke about this quite a lot this year. But I think that when you come back in the new year, make sure that the HR or ER teams are actually properly liaising with the health and safety teams about sexual harassment. So is sexual harassment listed in your risk register? Are risk assessments being done of your various work types, your various workplaces with respect to sexual harassment? That is a big issue. Safe Work Australia have flagged it as a health and safety issue, and they have some good guidance material available on their websites in terms of risk assessments, but that's one thing to check, I think, when you come back in a new year. The other thing about sexual harassment, and it feeds into other issues such as bullying, is thinking about some alternate approaches to training. Everyone's done compliance training for sexual harassment and bullying for many, many years now, and there are lots of both digital and face-to-face programs available. But think outside the square. Fabulous training in the form of bystander training is available. Bystander intervention is a great way to nip these types of issues in the bud and just have a different way of thinking about the problem, which might actually gain some more traction within your workforce. And lastly on that issue, maybe have a broader think about your complaints handling mechanisms. There are also different ways of looking at complaints handling, more victim-centred approaches. Now, these have other legal issues involved, but certainly the Respect at Work report did focus on having effective, confidential and supportive complaints mechanism processes in place in your workforce. So I think that's something to just think about from a broad sense, and perhaps set aside some time in January when you're back at work to really look at your processes, look at whether or not sexual harassment is in fact being treated as a safety issue within the business.
And one of the other things that also occurs to me, particularly as you start to fold that issue into your risk register, is that it's going to be something that becomes the focus point for boards and executive teams, if it's not already, into the new year. Are you starting to see, you know, more conversations at that board level where, you know, we're going in to speak to our clients and their boards to make sure that they're focused on the right issues?
Yeah, definitely. There has been a real increase in interest from board members about the issues of sexual harassment. These aren't new issues. These are very, very old issues. But the media attention has certainly meant that boards are 100% focused on behavioural issues, which include sexual harassment, which include bullying, those raft of behavioural issues. So it is a big focus of boards, and I think that focus is being pushed down into management teams.
Thinking about, I guess, the issues that focused board's attention probably 2 years ago, and this leads us to probably the third big issue of consideration, I think, for the upcoming calendar year, is in and around wage compliance. So we did an insight a little while ago where we focused on the fact that if you cast your mind back to a pre-COVID universe, we'd all love to do that, but, you know, the issue of the day, you know, probably two and a half years ago was in and around wage theft and wage compliance. One of the things that I think, You know, if you look at the regulator, if you look at some of the more public identifications of some wage underpayment that's occurred in recent weeks and months, it's important to refocus attention, I think, also next year in and around those issues as well. Mm. Now that we're approaching, to a certain degree, a little bit more of a BAU approach in managing COVID, refocusing attention back on some of those really key risk management projects like wage compliance and record keeping, and making sure you've got your workforce mapped against your underpinning industrial instruments appropriately, couldn't be more important. You know, so many of the issues that we bump into advising businesses and advising clients is around the difficulty of managing what is a really complex industrial system. And a difficult industrial system, I'm sure you'd agree, Alice, because the award system itself doesn't line up neatly with each other.
No.
So it overlaps, it's open to interpretation, and there's a certain inherent ambiguity sometimes in where awards start and finish. So many of the clients and businesses that are finding challenges with the award system now and with wage compliance centres in and around that issue. So January is always a good time to start to think about, in my view, some of the projects that might set you up for success over the course of the year. And wage compliance, I think, is a key one.
And I think it's important, Michael, that wage compliance, like risk assessments, that it's not set and forget. So, okay, by now I would have hoped that most businesses have done their general audits to find out whether or not they're complying with their instruments backwards looking. But what are the forwards looking mechanisms that you have in place to continually check that when you negotiate a new enterprise agreement that payroll have the correct rules, for example? It's those ongoing processes that I think are incredibly important for teams, whether they be HR, IR or payroll, should all be talking to each other to get those ongoing compliance checks in place.
It's such a, I guess, forgotten interaction in terms of, you usually have, particularly in larger businesses, those that are involved in doing the bargaining. And then there's a range of different offshoots that come once that event has been concluded. So there's the communication with payroll to say the rules may have changed in particular respects, so let's update those aspects. There's also then the conversations that need to happen with operational personnel so that the practices that might be adopted in a workplace line up with the new world order as it might have been renegotiated under the new agreements.
And so often it doesn't happen. So thinking about those interactions and what you can almost institutionalize, I think, is a really important thing for pondering during January. Yeah. We also have an election coming up. How do you think that will affect employment and IR for 2022, if at all?
Well, it is a really interesting issue. I think there's a couple of things that always flow out when there's an election. And obviously, it's unlikely that you'll get any immediate legislative change. But what happens in an election year is that the macro environment in which businesses need to operate fundamentally shifts. You've got usually unions aligned with the Labor Party that are looking for workplace issues, because industrial relations and workplace relations has, for so many various election cycles, been a hot button issue from a policy position perspective. So, you know, if you think about wage compliance, if you think about enterprise bargaining, the environment in which you're going to potentially be doing those things might be heightened, both from an industrial temperature perspective, but also some of the issues that your business might be confronting that you find challenging, whether it's around compliance, whether it's around reaching agreement, could become the political football from which a broader national campaign might be mounted. So I think businesses need to think in and around an election year, and particularly the time when the election might ultimately be called, how you might want to manage your operational risk and your industrial relations risk in and around those issues.
Yeah, I think flowing on from that, one issue for me that I'm urging clients to really consider this year is wages growth. And while wages growth in itself isn't a legal issue, it has a flow-on impact in many HR and IR related legal issues. So no matter what industry you're in at the moment, there are labour shortages. So labour shortages is one issue that's pushing up wages, but there are also a number of other economic factors that are going into a growth in wages for the first time in many, many years. So what I'm seeing in terms of bargaining at the moment for enterprise agreements is that I'm seeing it is the norm for unions to come along with much higher wage demands than in the past. A year ago, we were doing 2-2.5% as the norm. Now we're looking really at the 4.5-5% as the norm for a lot of unions coming in and bargaining. And that is the reality that employers need to face, and they need to work out what to do about that. In a market where it's hard to find people because of COVID in particular, because of the reduction, if not elimination, of skilled immigration, you need to think about how you're going to handle it. And it's not just bargaining, so it's not just our traditional blue-collar workforces that are feeling this. It's very much in the white-collar space as well. There is enormous pressure on salary and wages at the moment. I think we'll see that flow through to the Fair Work Commission national minimum wage case this year, and you're certainly seeing it in terms of what the Reserve Bank is saying about the increase of real wages to deal with inflation. So I think people need to be thinking about how they are going to factor that into HR processes. If it's in the HR space around salary increases and keeping good people, they're going to need to be thinking about the increase in the superannuation guarantee contribution, which rises to 10.5% this July. Are you going to absorb it through salaries? Are you going to pay it on top? And then those people who are involved in bargaining and have award or enterprise agreement based staff, thinking about how you're going to factor that into your wages bill this year. And for HR and IR people, really preparing the business for the fact that wages are going up, and that's going to need to be factored in to any business planning and financial planning for this year.
Because it's not just a cost issue, but it's also a real employee engagement issue. Absolutely. As well. As yeah. The narrative, you know, in newspapers and in popular media points towards any kind of wages growth or inflation or acceleration.
That's what your employees prices. Want.
Exactly. And then try to keep the best talent. And I think we've spoken about that before as yeah. well, in the context of, you know, workplace flexibilities and the demand for an evolving way in which a modern workplace works as stimulated by the COVID crisis. There will continue to be those issues in and around how to get good quality employee engagement. So the great resignation that everyone's talking about doesn't perhaps darken your doorstep or darken those who are listening's doorstep as significantly as it may in other businesses.
Yeah, yeah. Thinking about that whole employee value proposition, if you're not one of those people involved in bargaining, to be able to push benefits through to employees without necessarily increasing wages to the expectations of where your employees might have them set. But I think wages and wages growth will be a really big issue in our space over the next 12 months.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's a couple of things also. So whilst we've spoken about, you know, obviously the forward-looking plan, there's a number of things that happened very interestingly this year in and around casual employment, in and around contractors as well. And it's obviously relevant to consider those important changes that occurred in our environment as HR and employee relations professionals this year, but to make sure, obviously, to not lose sight of them in the forward yeah, planning year as well.
It was a big year for casuals.
Well,
the law about casuals. I don't know if casuals themselves noticed any difference, but certainly as lawyers, we talked a lot about casuals this year.
Yeah, and some of those changes, so in and around the amendments to the Fair Work Act, casual conversion provisions. So, you know, the first wave, I think, of those, the impact of those changes was felt through that transitional period.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think to one of the points you made earlier, so many of these things can't be set and forget. So now there needs to be a continual process to manage casual employment proposition consistent with your legal obligations moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, if you should have already done this, but certainly it's something to think about whether or not you have, and if you haven't, perhaps get onto it right away in January. But the changes to the Fair Work Act with the definition of casual employment, you know, basically told us how to draft our casual employment contracts. So they all really do need to reflect those changes to the Act and the primacy of the employment contract when it comes to the definition of who is a casual and who isn't, which I'll circle back to in a second. But the other issue is, of course, the casual conversion clauses in awards. Again, compliance with those was supposed to be a couple of months ago, but to your point, they're not set and forget. These are continuous deadlines that you need to meet. And from my perspective, it's making sure that you've got the right processes in place, which will greatly assist with compliance around casual conversion. But one thing that was so interesting this year about casuals was, of course, the decision of the High Court in Rosado, and this idea that the employment contract really does have primacy. What does the employment contract say?
Yeah, that's so true. I think, you know, it's always exciting when you've got high court decisions in the employment and workplace relations space being handed down. And Rosado was a really important and significant case. Obviously, with the changes that occurred to the Fair Work Act, they were significant as well. But the decision in Rosado, I think, for so many employers engaging casual employees was a relief to have the High Court reaffirm the importance of the express contractual terms in defining the relationship. One of the other significant cases that is on the docket and currently with a decision reserved deals with independent contracting relationships. So there were two matters that were joined, a personal contracting matter and also JAMSEC. And they were heard by the High Court in late August, early September. Now, some of the issues that are live there are squarely in the same vein as the High Court's deliberations in Rosado, so looking at the nature of the contractual relationship and this important issue for employers that do use independent contractor relationships to try to identify whether in fact the nature of the relationship is one of employment or one of a true independent contractor arrangement. So, you know, I expect that coming into 2022, those who tune into A Word to the Wise, the Kingston Reid podcast series, we'll hear from Alice and myself or others about the evolution of not only that issue, but the other very important issues that happen in the employment, HR and employee relations area.
Well, it's probably enough for, I don't want people to ponder too much over their break.
I think that's probably right. I think hopefully we've given those listening enough to think about as they either pause on their first or second Aperol spritz through the course of their summer afternoon. But thank you very much for joining us. Those who might be listening to this pre-Christmas, from Kingston Reid and from myself and Alice, we hope you have a happy, enjoyable and safe Christmas and festive season. And we look forward to connecting with you in the new year. Please feel free and please, we would love for you to subscribe to the Kingston Reid podcast series, Word to the Wise, wherever all good podcasts are subscribed to. Thanks again, Alice, for the chat.
Thanks, Michael.
And we'll catch up with you all in the new year.